Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 42. Today's episode is brought to you by the Global Workspace Association. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Kay Sargent, who is the Senior Vice President and Director of HOK's Strategic Accounts Practice. And she published the most comprehensive overview of co-working for the commercial real estate audience that I've seen. And we dive into some really great insights from the report. I did want to make a quick correction. During the recording, I reference podcast episode number 40 or 41 for the show notes, and it's actually number 42. So to grab the report, which is linked to in the show notes, you want to go to everythingcoworking.com/42. Enjoy the interview. I am here this evening with Kay Sargent, who's based in Washington, D.C., and she was kind enough to do this interview at 8 p.m. her time. She's a Senior Vice President and Director of HOK's Strategic Accounts Practice. She leads diverse project teams that solve clients' business and organizational challenges related to real estate business process, strategic planning, workplace strategy, and change management. She is really active in the industry. She's on the board of Cornet, an active member of IFMA, and a contributor to Work Design magazine, among a long list of other things, and I'll include her full profile in the show notes. And she recently published the most comprehensive overview of co-working for the commercial real estate audience that I've seen to date. It's titled Co-working, A Corporate Real Estate Perspective. It covers the evolution of co-working, the demand drivers of co-working, supply drivers, an overview of the owners, the co-workers, the centers, corporate co-working, and industry risks. I consider it a must-read for anyone doing work in the workspace industry today, and I reached out to Kay to see if she would be willing to talk through some of her insights from the report. So Kay, thank you so much for joining me today.
Happy to.
And she just survived a week in D.C. of the inauguration festivities, so we're glad you're on the other side of that.
Thank you. I think we all are.
Yeah. So we'll dive right in. Like I said, the report was so well done, and I just wanted to kind of dive into some insights that I think are particularly interesting to my audience, which I think is mostly space operators and folks thinking about operating co-working spaces. So one of the big questions on operator minds is around the tipping point of corporations utilizing flexible spaces more often. And you kind of, in your intro, talk about a kind of a dramatic weakness of corporate real estate. And you say, you know, utilization rates can be 50% or less, but that the organizations have not responded very quickly to these challenges, and that you think sort of some of the work practices and policies aren't yet reflecting reality and sort of optimizing to produce the best results. What is the path to that? Like, what kind of are the things that need to change to get there? And what do you think will sort of drive that? And what's, what do you, in your perspective, what is the timing that it's going to take to get there, where we see sort of more optimal space use, some use of, you know, some reduction of corporate real estate, more use of third and fourth places? How do you see that unfolding?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think actually saying that 50% occupancy is actually pretty optimistic. I think for a lot of places, what we're finding is that they're lucky to have most of their space occupied 30 or 40% of the time. So the numbers are pretty staggering. And I think it's been that way, quite frankly, for some time. And in 2008, we kind of got the catalyst that everybody needed to push them into really kind of reassessing their real estate and doing something differently. And two things happened. A few things happened. People that had offices really kind of condensed that and kind of incorporated a benching scenario as their preferred solution. And that had very, very mixed results. But also you had a lot of people that were let go, that were freelancers, that couldn't get work, and space vacancies were at an all-time high. And so it's kind of the perfect storm to drive people to want different alternatives and or to need that different alternatives, and the rise really of what we saw is kind of the fourth place or co-working facilities. And I think what's happening is that, you know, now it's been about 8 years and people are really starting to assess what their real needs are. And I think what the driving factor, I think, behind anything is for companies and individuals to really know thyself. You know, organizational DNA is something that is truly unique. And I think a lot of people really underestimate who they are. And so I think it's important for them to really understand, you know, what are the real work styles, the demographics, the regional influences, the culture, the industry that you're in, and the organizational structure, to really determine what's right for you and what's right for your company. And a shift in any one of those six categories that we really kind of consider the streams that make up an organizational DNA could drive to a different solution. But we're starting to see that options and choice and variety is almost a given in any one of those.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're a proponent of an organization needing to understand itself and then identify the right choices. I saw a post on LinkedIn yesterday, and I can't remember who posted it, but she was kind of advocating that organizations overthink this a bit and should sort of just let go and let people kind of do whatever they want as long as they're getting the work done.
You know, that's a great philosophy if you're not the head of corporate real estate decisions, right? You know, like, I mean, in all honesty, a lot of campus planning, best laid plans, you know, they won't pave until they see how students track. And so they leave a lot of the sidewalks and a lot of these spaces unpaved initially, and then they see how they use them. I'm not sure I'd go into a head of corporate real estate and suggest, hey, let's just, you know, throw it all up and just kind of see what happens. But there is some merit in assessing quickly how people are using space and adjusting to that and agility. And quite frankly, I believe it's the reason that the Australians and some of the folks in Asia and in Europe are ahead of us on this curve, because in the U.S., we typically plan, you know, 10-year lease cycles. We put a lot of money into it, and the heads of corporate real estate have a tremendous amount of pressure to get it right. To get it right, because we're only going to do it once every 10 years. And that model is really broken, because things are changing so quickly that if you only do it once every 10 years, you're relegating yourself to becoming obsolete. And what's happening in markets where they're much more willing to risk or take chances because the lease terms are shorter, the build outs aren't as extensive, or there's a different type of build out, or they monetize it in a different way, they can take more risk. And when you take more risk, you take more opportunities and chances, and you see what works and doesn't, and then you fix it, right? And so I think there's been a tremendous amount of progress. You know, in Australia, they're on their fourth or fifth rendition of activity-based working because they have that philosophy. Where in the U.S., you know, we're barely through our first.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. And actually, a lot of people often ask why the Australians are ahead of the curve. I've heard some people say, I mean, that makes sort of structural sense. And then I've heard others say because of where they're located, they always feel like they're behind. So they're trying to be out in front of the curve culturally.
Well, I would say culturally, look, I think you really need to understand, this is why I'm talking about, you know, the demographics and the DNA. The Australians are much more egalitarian. Okay? And so you can't go to a place where hierarchy is an integrated fiber of the culture. Like if you go to the Middle East or to India or to certain parts of Latin America where there is a caste or a class system and you try to put everybody in open plan and make everybody equal, it goes against every bone of their corporate, not even their corporate, you know, their company's culture. And so in Australia, they tend to be very egalitarian about that and probably one of the least hierarchical societies on the planet. Yeah. And so for them to do those types of things is not that big of a shift.
Yep.
And I think, you know, there's a big difference that a lot of people don't intuitively understand, that you really need to understand the culture that you're dealing with, not only of the region that you're in, but of the company that you're in. You know, and I think a lot of it also has to do with work styles. You know, there's this raging debate about who can work mobily and who can't. Right. And, you know, when Marissa Meyer brought everybody back to Yahoo, everybody said, oh, it's the end of mobility. Well, no. You have to look at businesses go through cycles. And they had gone through a cycle, but it was sales oriented, but they didn't have anything to sell anymore. And so they needed to innovate. And the way that you innovate is you bring people back.
Together.
And so it really depends on what cycle your company is in. If you're sales and consultative, you want your people out of the office, because if they're in the office, they're not making you any money. And so you want to design spaces that are a temporary gathering space and a touchdown, but not really encourage people to stay there for long times. And if you're trying to create the next great thing, then you want everybody to be, you know, in a little pod and a little nucleus in a neighborhood, and you want them to eat, sleep, and breathe together and really kind of build that synergy. And you don't want them ever leaving the office, because they're going to ideate faster in that kind of environment. And so you really need to look at the nature of the business, what people are doing, what cycle you might be in. And, you know, quite frankly, companies are pretty dynamic today, and it's rare that, you know, one thing is going to be the answer for the entire organization. So it's kind of creating blended solutions based on what their needs are of the different groups and understanding their real organizational DNA.
That makes absolute sense. It's a great perspective. So for employees that don't need to be certain in a role where it's appropriate for them to not be in the office all of the time or every day, how do you see those policies shifting? Do you think employers are starting to focus on more options and sort of policies that allow people to work in co-working spaces?
Slowly, but not fast enough. And I will tell you, there's a real lag, I think, in particularly in HR and policy issues in most organizations. I asked an audience recently of about 400 or 500 people how many of their companies had policies around working from home, mobility, co-working, et cetera, and nobody raised their hand. And I was shocked. And I said, okay, well, wait a minute. Let me rephrase that question. How many of you guys may not have the policies, but it's happening organically in your organization anyway? And almost everybody raised their hand. And I think there's a real hesitation and a real lag on a lot of people's parts to put in any kind of formal policy around this or any kind of formal structure. And sometimes for good reason, other times just because they don't necessarily know how to get ahead of it. But the bottom line is, it is absolutely happening, and it's kind of evolving. And I think a lot of people originally just thought, you know, teleworking is pretty much you go one place, typically from home, and you work from home all over the place. Mobility can be internal to an organization. It can be external. Right. We even coined, you know, the term gobility, which is you're working, you know, any day you could be in a different place, right? You can be in an airport, you could be at a co-working center, you could be at your office, you know, you just kind of go where you need to go. And I think, you know, Jamie, you had asked, we had talked a little bit about home and why originally so many people were working from home, but then they seem to migrate from home to kind of, you know, the third places, which are those coffee shops, to the fourth places, which are co-working centers. Look, there are as many distractions at home as there are in the office, sometimes even more, right? I mean, you know, we talked about this. I have three generations in my house.
Right,
I have
a right. dog. And the dogs. Yeah, exactly. We're both hiding out from distractions.
Right. I have laundry. I have refrigerators. I have cookies in my kitchen. You know, I mean, you know, get me out of here, please. Right. Like, you know, one day a week from home. And besides that, it's, you know, it's just not going to be productive. And I also think that, you know, we want to connect. We are social beings and social creatures. And I think that people, when they can connect with others, there's an energy and a buzz that you get. Look, nobody went to work in a coffee shop because they loved paying $5 for a cup of coffee, right?
Right.
Nobody.
And eating pastries all day.
Right. It was because you wanted to be in an energy, in an environment that had some energy to it. And I think that's what a lot of people really strive for and want. And that's what co-working is providing, is it's providing a sense of community that people really thrive on.
Yeah, I started doing some research around the concept of loneliness related to work. And it's interesting, there's a lot that shows up around, you know, especially today with such a technology-oriented culture, that people feel lonelier than ever. And I think the component of people being able to work from home and the growth of freelancers and independent workers working at home kind of as a base case is going to drive that even more, and people not really thinking about the implications of that and what that means. And there are articles that talk about loneliness being worse than obesity, like what it does to you physically, not to mention mentally. So I think the idea of workplaces kind of putting some support around people not being at home as the default versus being at work is interesting. Yeah. And I'm curious about kind of how long that will take to for that shift to happen.
Well, and I think, you know, we're starting to see that. And I think, it, you know, in the paper, we talked about what were the main reasons or what were people really seeking. Mm-hmm. And 2/3 of the people, or the top 5 out of the 7 responses, all had to do with connection.
Yeah.
And the ability and the desire to connect with other people. And, you know, I think it's interesting, and I don't think most people really want to talk about this, but I don't know about you. When I went into the workforce, the concept was I'm going to work for 30 years, right? Well, without us even really waking up and realizing it, the bottom line is I've already been working for 32 years and I'll be working for 15 more. I mean, you know, somewhere in there, it went from 30 to 50. And as, you know, the younger generation, they will likely live longer and longer. And that means they will likely work longer and longer. And so there's a point where you kind of want that to be more on your terms. And you want to be able to have a little bit more balance in how you do things. And it's, I think it's going to radically change the way that we work. I think, you know, there's going to be sabbaticals. I think people are going to take time off and take breaks. I think it's just going to really shift. And the office, I think, will always be, because people like to connect and come together. And that's an important and essential part of who we are. But it's evolving. And co-working is absolutely one of the components of how it's evolving.
Yeah, absolutely. So from an insider's perspective, someone who's been in workspace for years and has a lot of experience looking at things that go well and don't go well, you talk about a number of challenges around co-working growth and success. What to you will be the success drivers for the model?
I think if it serves its purpose by giving people options and choices, I think that will do it. I think that there are absolutely some challenges that are starting to come and to creep into the co-working world, and it's going to be really interesting to see. I think there's going to be a little bit of a bumpy road mm-hmm. ahead. You know, I think most of these centers were started when rent was cheaper, vacancies were high, and there were lots of people unemployed and looking for that. And as the millennials are aging and going through a life cycle switch where now all of a sudden they want to have kids, they want to have houses, some of their needs are shifting. And I think some of their work habits are going to start shifting along with that. I think that as these leases for some of these initial spaces come due, they're going to be higher. And there's going to be, you know, I think, it's, you know, it's interesting when you think about the model is based on a very volatile occupant. You know, most of the people in the surveys and the studies that we're finding are actually staying at a co-working center for less than a year.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the operators have to rent space for a 10-year basis or long-term, you know, leases for a tenant that could basically be gone tomorrow. And so, you know, we still see the emergence and the rise of co-working, but it's becoming saturated in certain markets. It's expanding into others, and it's starting to evolve so that it's starting to be customized to individuals. So, for instance, you know, I jokingly have kind of said, look, I don't want to go and be in a hipster place where I feel like a total poser, and it's not comfortable and it doesn't meet my needs. And they're starting really to cater to individuals. You know, I said I would pay more money to go to something that had, you know, maybe some nicer amenities or some other things that might be more appealing to someone of my demographic. And you're starting to see those emerge. And so they're starting to create customized, you know, there's just a ton. There's incubators, there's accelerators, there are ones that are geared towards, you know, all like a design community. There's other ones that are absolutely a mix so that you could have a small business and be with, you know, everybody else that's starting their small business, and you know, one person's a lawyer, one person's a marketer, one person's an accountant, you're a designer or whatever, and it's like a whole community is starting to form. And so I think there's going to be an emergence of those spaces, but the model is a little risky, and it's especially as leases and rents are starting to go up. And so what we're starting to see now is where building owners and developers who have space that before maybe they couldn't lease because it was only a few thousand square feet, say, and it wasn't necessarily desirable space, or you know, an interesting location, are giving those up and they're taking the risk and they're bringing in operators. So the operator isn't, you know, having to sign a lease and they're just operating the center. And so it's kind of like everybody's putting a little skin in the game here to buffer against that higher risk model that co-working tends to be. So it's going to be interesting to see how it evolves over the next few years. I think the other thing that's starting to happen is, and quite frankly, the real reason that we wrote the paper is we have a lot of very large corporate clients that are coming to us and they're asking us about co-working and how it's going to impact their business. And I think there's some really obvious ways that it's going to impact their business. It's going to impact them because it's going to give them more options and choices. It's going to give them faster solutions. So an example, HOK won a big project. We literally had to bring in hundreds of people to work on this project into an office that didn't have the space to do it. And it was a 3-year project. And now in the past model, that would have been very difficult to figure out how to staff that and what do we do and, you know, how do we find space and then build it out and then sign a lease, et cetera. What we did is we took a lot of our administrative people who didn't necessarily need to be in the office every day and we put them in co-working space right down the street and they were there 3 days later and we made space. And so it gives a level of fungibility to corporations that they never really had before, which is really kind of nice. And I think that example I just gave is one of the reasons that now more than 50% of the people working in co-working centers are employed by some big corporation. They're not all sole practitioners or part-timers or second career folks. There are a lot of people that are working for companies that just want to find more innovative space solutions.
Yeah, I think that 50% number would surprise a number of people. And I think, to your point, it will start to drive sort of a higher bar for member experience because corporate employees are used to a certain level of design and options and support and hospitality. And yeah, I think the market will start to evolve to support that.
Well, I think the other thing that's interesting, Jamie, is not only are co-working centers evolving, but corporate offices are evolving as well. So if you look at it, one of the key elements of co-working centers is that sense of community and that sense of curated experience, right? There's somebody there that greets you, that takes care of you, that does stuff. Quite frankly, most people don't have in their offices anymore, right? You know, we've kind of done away with that. And on one hand, it's kind of nice to be in control. On the other hand, you know, there are many days and I'm like, you're doing stuff that is like, you got to be kidding me, right? And you just wish sometimes that you would have somebody that could help you do some of those basic things. And a lot of our corporate clients are coming to us and saying, how do we create spaces that are more co-working alike? Yeah. And yeah. So as these big corporations or companies are starting to get, you know, they're starting to go into funkier spaces, they're starting to go into, you know, creative office types environments, they're starting to create the UX or that user experience and really focus on, you know, like a business concierge center or resource centers or, you know, folks that can help them with different things. And they're trying to emulate a lot of that experience that you're getting in a co-working center. That will fulfill part of what people are getting in co-working centers now. In fact, we've actually seen the new emergence of a lot of these developers are creating a section of their building that's kind of a shared amenities space slash kind of co-working-esque within the building. And it's amenities for the people that are in that building that they can access it. So creating those spaces within corporate areas is becoming a draw to try to get people to come back in a sense. And it will also be a rising challenge to some co-working models.
That's a good point. What do you think about the role of the community manager in a corporate context? Do you think that that'll, I mean, you kind of alluded to that. Do you think that'll start to come into play?
I think that's putting it very mildly. I think that is the next huge thing that we're really going to see.
Okay.
I think in all honesty, we are no longer designing the environment. We're designing the experience. Yeah. And it really is about experiences because people have options and choices. And so I really believe that there's a few things that I think are going to happen. You know, we've got the Internet of Things. And for every one person out there, there are literally 7 sensors in a building. And the second that those sensors start talking to each other and start really being able to enhance the experience of the user, it will totally change the role of the facility manager, because buildings will become more intuitive and be able to function more independently. I believe the role of the facility manager will shift from being servicing the building to servicing the occupant of the building. Mm-hmm. And the community manager role is really going to become an essential element as we go forward.
I think, to your point, can solve a lot of what people... I wrote an article for Work Design Magazine about, you know, why do corporations not have the community manager role? Because in a co-working space, they do a number of things, including hospitality roles, but also to connect the people in the space and to help identify where connections should be made when the individuals don't know that they should be made. And there's a huge opportunity for that in the corporate context, for innovation, for networking, you know, for a lot of the things that companies want to accomplish by putting people in a shared workspace environment. So I think it's neat that you think that's kind of the next big thing. That'll be exciting.
Well, yeah. And I think the other thing, you know, it's interesting. I mean, we're showing that stress levels are going up because, you know, this whole techno stress of people being connected 24 hours a day, expected to be, you know, responsive all the time is really stressing people out. And so bringing an element of gamification or an element of fun into the workspace, I think it's a levity that is sorely needed in a world that is becoming very anxious and very stressed. And so there are several companies that have really started to cultivate that and to understand that that's a critical element. You know, the happiness factor is one that most people downplay, but it's significant. And so we're starting to see the rise of chief cultural officers, that their whole job is to make sure that it's, you know, that the space and the environment and the culture is one that is conducive to really making people prosper and the company prosper.
Yeah, I love it. So one final, this is a little bit of a more tactical question than the path we've been on, but I'm curious about your perspective. So as we see companies using co-working spaces more, how long do you think it'll take before they move past sort of the level of like the WeWorks and the Regus and embrace some of the more independent local operators?
I think it depends on the market that you're in and the kind of industry that you're in. So, you know, we're starting to see a big push in different markets, not necessarily the big cities anymore. As you know, there's a lot of people that are leaving San Francisco now because they've realized, I want to have kids, I want to have a family, and
I want to retire someday.
Right, I want to own a house, you know? Yeah. And so places like St. Louis and Kansas City are really starting to see that. But we're also starting to see that model being picked up in, you know, the libraries, in non-traditional spaces. You know, banks are starting to create kind of community centers where you can go and you can work. The insurance companies have been doing that for some time and kind of piloting and testing that in a lot of these retail branches that they have in downtown locations. Universities are starting to do that. And, you know, I mean, you think about the university library and the community center, it's always been there, right? And so it's like, how do we really open that up? Because I think we're starting to see the emergence in libraries, in community centers, in, you know, bank branches. You know, we're starting to see it kind of develop in a lot of different areas and really blend if people are trying to create those spaces that will draw people in. And I think it's a very conscientious effort on a lot of people's parts to create a variety of settings and options that people can go to today.
Yeah, it's an interesting turning point. There's a lot of shift in the marketplace, and we'll have to be interesting to have this conversation in a couple of years because I think a lot will have changed. Well, I really appreciate your perspective. And for anybody who has not seen the report yet, I think it's such a great combination of sort of higher level strategic thinking along with some really tactical takeaways in terms of kind of the risks and challenges around co-working. So for anybody who's interested in the space, it's an important read. And I will put it in the show notes. The show notes will be at everythingcoworking.com/41. So Kay, I know it's late. Thank you so much for your time and your perspective. Really appreciate it.
You're more than welcome. Happy to chat anytime and hope we can talk again soon.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.